From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 808, IT in 2022. Run As Radio is produced each week by Sound Thoughts LLC. For more information, visit SoundThoughtsLLC.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/RunAsRadio.
Hi, this is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio, and it's the end of another year, and I hope you and yours are having a great holiday season. I'm snuggled in at home with a good whiskey and all these notes about the sort of state of IT. I started this kind of by accident back in 2020 when I was thinking, oh, it's a new decade, and perhaps, and yeah, I'm zero-based. I started in 2020. I was thinking about the next decade in IT. Little did I know that a few months later, the pandemic would strike, and by April, I did the show IT in the Time of Pandemic and also started up a second show a week for the rest of 2020. Talking about those pandemic topics until it became strange, until it was hard to tell what was just regular IT and what was pandemic IT, because let's face it, we're just in a new normal now. And the end of last year, I did it again with sort of a summary of the pandemic and the end of the pandemic series and a few predictions of what I thought the future was going to look like, things around networking and some of the new features for no code and so forth. And of course, an emphasis on security, because even in 2020, we were having a tough time with ransomware, but boy, oh boy, it's hard to argue with the ramp up in 2021. Part of me wondered if it wasn't just a side effect of us pushing all those users out to their homes and blowing up the perimeters we still had. You know, they tell us we're supposed to be using zero trust, but it's not as easy as you think. And lots of folks did a lot of different approaches to try and break that out. In fact, I have a comment on the show from last year, from show 756, this comment's from John, and he says, regarding the desktop versus laptop discussion, my firm is now using virtual desktop nearly everywhere. Most of the mini towers under the desk have been replaced with deck of cards sized thin clients, with the result that we haven't needed to station IT people on site to handle issues with physical machines, such as blue screens of death or failing hardware. Everything is being able to be handled remotely via our control center. Also, our desktop apps are much closer to the servers, which can be especially helpful in the event of a BCP. Is that brandy, champagne, and popcorn? No. That would be business continuity. BCP event during which the active data center is suddenly three states away. It's more expensive than running regular desktops for sure. And that's a great assessment, John, that it does cost money to go all VDI like this. But it took about a year to plan and deploy to everyone, but the management benefits have been enormous. I got to think it also has really helped when you have more folks working from home or moving around to have less complex machines out in the field, less data exposure, and more control over the whole overall context. So I will talk a little bit about virtualization on this show just because I think it's continuing to grow. And John, thank you so much for your comment. A Run As Radio mug is on its way to you. And if you'd like a Run As Radio mug, write a comment on the website at runasradio.com or any of the social medias. I publish the Run As episodes to Facebook and to LinkedIn. And if you comment there and I read it on the show, I'll send you a mug. All right. I guess we got to start with security because I was talking a lot last year about, boy, you know, the state actors are a thing, although they seem to have gotten quieter this year just because ransomware just kind of detonated in an epic way, huge attacks. The Colonial Gas, those kinds of multi-million dollar attacks. Although there's been another side to that, which is also that when ransomware started to get this organized, you know, early in 2021, we started hearing about ransomware as a service, that on the dark net, you could go out and you could actually use the software of these criminals and take a cut of the money in the process. They would literally provide you the service for it. And it's a side effect when criminals get that organized, and that is that the good guys get that organized back. And we saw the FBI and Europol and other organizations roll in and shut down a lot of those big attacks. The dark side folks suddenly went totally dark, just like their name. The re-evil guys got shut down, and several of them got arrested. And just recently, in the past couple of months, we saw the Black Matter organization also get caught up in a mass arrest in the Ukraine and the Czech Republic. It goes to show that these ransomware attacks, while they do make money, it is a crime. And it is a criminal activity, and it's getting prosecuted by crime. And so criminals get away with things when they're not too organized. As soon as they start to scale up and start to think that all is well and they can continue to function, that's really when we start seeing the good guys get organized back and kind of wrap them up. Now, that doesn't mean that ransomware is going away. There's too much money out there. This has been a little too successful. They're certainly going a little further under the rocks. They're hiding harder. We're also seeing new variations, this approach of ransomware criminals looking for disgruntled employees to give them a doorway in. I got to hope that's not a sysadmin that gets talked into that it's somebody else that has a limited amount of access, that they don't really have the keys of the castle to be able to propagate particularly well. And if I was running a shop right now where I was in regular communication with my users, I think I'd, alongside my other anti-phishing strategies and so forth, remind folks, if you get approached like that, just remember they are criminals and they're very likely to throw you under the bus. And it's a crime trying to extort a company for money. I'm staying away from the word hacker these days. It's too friendly. These are crimes. These are criminals. The crime is extortion. And ransomware is losing effectiveness in some respects. The air-gapped backup, the read-only backup, stops us from losing our data. I mean, you still have to restore. That's not a trivial problem. And I think it's an important part of our jobs in a situation like that to know how long a restoration would take from those cold backups all the way back from scratch, so that your company leadership can make coherent decisions around what they're prepared to do to get back up and running. But having a set of protected backups so you can restore doesn't mean you aren't going to lose some data. You're certainly going to lose some productivity. But as we've seen over and over again, and I did almost a dozen ransomware and security related shows in the past year, as we've seen over and over again, the recovery from ransomware attack takes weeks. And I don't think that's sunk in on a lot of folks. When you're having your conversation with your leadership about these things, it's just to understand that the criminals are lying when they say you can recover quickly. They just enter this key, send us the Bitcoin, and you're good. It's not true. It's going to take longer than that. There's going to be more problems than that. Sometimes the decryptions don't work. Sometimes data is permanently destroyed. And sometimes restoration is the best alternative. But the other side of ransomware is the exfiltration of data. And the fact that you have to look at the impact on the company if that data is released into the wild. You're seeing the criminals now targeting companies that are very sensitive to reputation, like legal firms and healthcare-related firms, where they're holding on to sensitive customer data that would be very harmful to be exposed. So even if they can't encrypt all of our backups, they can certainly impair operations and then use this data for extortion, if not for the company itself, for the individual customers and patients. And that's an ugly place to get into. And certainly nothing we want to really get ourselves too involved with in the ransomware side. You make yourself a very hard target with lots of minimum privilege, with getting admin rights off of workstations, so that even if a machine has a phishing attack go off on it, which, let's face it, that still happens, we can't guarantee a no breach situation, right? There's still 0 days. It's what happens after that matters. So when you've eliminated those privileges, when you can keep machines contained and you have good monitoring so that you can pick up on an attack, you know, again, these conversations we've had this past year have shown often these large-scale attacks are prepared over weeks with regular command and control communications back to a headquarters site. And so network monitoring, machine monitoring, these are all tools that will allow us to see when a potential ransomware attack is underway. It's just a question of, can you detect it? Do you understand what you're seeing when you see odd behavior about files being opened inappropriately and so forth and recognize that looks like it might be a Trojan inside of our network and maybe we should start to lock down? Cybersecurity has evolved and cyber insurance along with it. I've been talking to a few different insurance firms and the actuaries are paying attention. The side effect of the wave of successful attacks has also meant a wave of payouts for cyber insurance. And that means rates have gone through the roof 5 to 10 times increases in fees for insurance these days. You're also seeing the actuaries getting smart and putting new requirements on. And I bring this up because I think it's important for us as IT folks. We're probably not the ones buying the cyber insurance. It's probably being done by finance. And they may be agreeing to an insurance policy that has stipulations in it that the company's not compliant to. And the classic one is multi-factor authentication. It's becoming increasingly common with cyber insurance that inside of that document is a requirement that every accessible account have multi-factor authentication enabled on it. And if you're not aware of that as an IT person, it's easy for the company to not be in compliance of its own policy. So it's in your best interest to check in with finance about any cyber insurance policies that may be taken out and have a good read of them. You know, this is a conversation we had last year, the same show, or saying going further down the multi-factor authentication path is a good thing. This past year has been pretty great for passwordless for authentication users and so forth. But imagine now that the CFO has signed an insurance agreement that requires MFA. Now it's no longer you and your tinfoil hat saying we need to protect, we need to protect, we need to protect. It is a part of an agreement that the company's made and spent money on, you know, starting with the CFO themselves, get MFA up and running, preferably an authenticator rather than SMS, and get it onto everyone. And again, we're seeing in a lot of these kinds of attacks, like business email compromise and most ransomware attacks, multi-factor authentication works. It's a good strategy. It's something to make a difference. The actuaries wouldn't be adjusting rates for cyber insurance if they didn't think it made a difference. So I'll go with their math. Of course, ransomware wasn't the only security problem we had over the past year. We did a couple of shows around Print Nightmare, and wasn't that fun? And it brought up the question of, remember when we were going to go paperless? Whatever happened to that? Why are we printing so much stuff? But, you know, we're finding now that bit by bit, as more systems get scrutinized, the extensive privileges that were given to tools like printing to make it easy to get a printer up and running quickly also have a downside to them of having security problems. And it sort of speaks to our need on the security side of things for our infrastructure to modernize, to use the modern way to run print drivers, to demand those level 4 drivers from our vendors, and make that a selection criteria for any product going forward. Because what's the point of having it if you can't secure it, if it's just going to be a vulnerability and a nightmare every time you want to use them? Also, at the end of the year, and I don't know how many listening here have been touched by this, I was fortunately pretty much protected from it, but the Log4j exploit was an amazing moment. I mean, I'm not going to throw stones. We had Hafnium this year too, tearing through all that old Exchange infrastructure. So we're, you know, no better. Log4j is one of those libraries that's absolutely everywhere, but it brought up a really interesting aspect of security that I don't think we've thought enough about. And I do have some shows coming up on it, starting with, do you know not only the manifest of what applications your organization runs on and the various versions they are, but inside of those applications, what libraries do they have? Could you have answered the question, which of our internal applications are vulnerable to the Log4j exploit? And that means a software bill of materials, that we actually are aware of all those different libraries. And perhaps that's got to be part of the build process going forward, that any app deployed into our infrastructure adds an entry to a system somewhere that not only indicates the app and the version and where it's deployed, but also the key library dependencies it has. There have been some folks in the Log4j that have gone after open source. They blamed open source for this. And I think it's a mistake. It's not true at all. It's an excuse to not use open source, but it's not actually going to protect you. Yes, it is. Log4j was an open source product. And yes, the error was introduced by a volunteer developer who was giving their time to improve a product that they cared about, that created this particular circumstance, and it was patched. The issue was purely getting that new version deployed in all those applications, which is always the hard part. But imagine if Log4j had been a for retail product. It still easily could have had the same vulnerability. The difference was that the only people that could have detected it were the people that worked for the company that owned the software. And in terms of, you know, any recompense, well, read any end user license agreement. And the first thing it says is that any harm come to your organization by our code, we're completely held non-liable for. You only get to use the software if you hold us non-liable. So closed source arguably would have made the situation worse, not better. It's not a sound argument. And fundamentally, we're just going to keep having this problem. For us as IT people, it's not going to be never have an exploit. It's being able to respond to them when they occur. And, you know, here we are halfway through the show, and all I've talked about is security, but it has been that kind of year. So let's take a brief pause to this very important message. This episode of Run As Radio is brought to you by the Humanitarian Toolbox. Humanitarian Toolbox builds open source software for disaster relief organizations. One of the leading projects, called 2 Weeks Ready, helps individuals, families, and communities prepare for disasters using smartphones. HTBox builds and operates this and other applications on behalf of a variety of disaster response organizations, and they need your help. Go to htbox.org for more information or to make a tax-deductible donation. HTBox is a 501c3 U.S. registered charity. Your donations help support the creation of this life-saving software. Thanks. And we're back. It's Run As Radio. I'm Richard Campbell. I'm flying solo and doing my end-of-year recap and thinking a little bit about IT in 2022, mostly about talking about what's happened in 2021. Hey, we had a new version of Windows ship. Remember when they told us there wasn't going to be any more, that Windows 10 was the end? Well, apparently they changed our mind and we got a Windows 11. Now, Windows 10 and Windows 11 are going to live side by side. Shortly after Windows 11 shipped, then 21H2 of Windows 10s also got deployed. They're saying there'll be support for Windows 10 Enterprise Edition until at least 2025, part of that 30-month rolling version support. That being said, Windows 11 is actually opening the door to a 36-month extended support for Enterprise Edition. We're also seeing Microsoft back off on the rapid updating of Windows. For a while there, it was every quarter, then it was twice a year. Now they're saying it's back to annual updates. And I don't think anybody's terribly upset about that. What we want from Windows these days is reliability. Features are almost secondary to the point. Ship features as an SDK or a separate install if we want them. Give me an operating system that operates every day and doesn't get in my way. That seems to be the reaction. Of course, I also look at Windows 11 and say, that first release really seemed more like a consumer rev, and I'm waiting to see more enterprise features and more focus on the enterprise, probably in that first major update to 11. That'll make a difference. I got nothing bad to say about Server 2022. It kind of arrived quietly and gracefully. The main thing I saw, and we did shows around this as well, was some great new storage features. We had Ned Pyle on and talk about those things. The array of, it's not really new security features, because mostly security features are available for other versions of Windows, but the security features by default, TLS 1.3, DNS over HTTPS, SMB over QUIC, those are all better security features. It just means that with 2022, you tend to do the right thing because it's what's on by default. And same with its closer working with Azure. I think that's an important strength. I've been watching Windows 365 Cloud. I haven't done a show on it yet, but it ties into the listener's comment about virtual desktops, because it does seem like Windows 365 Cloud is an easy way into virtual desktop, where the Azure virtual desktop product represents a larger commit, much like the Citrix product. They're more complex to deploy. They take a team. It takes a significant initiative to do VDI well. It seems like Win 365 might be an easy way to get into that. Initially, 2021 and 2022, certainly the more digital transformation, continuing motion into the cloud. Of course, it got rushed by the pandemic and put a lot of stress on us and everyone else, that we did a lot of transformation quickly. I saw it more as a realigning of priorities. It's not as if these apps and these environments weren't on the schedule to move to the cloud at some time. It's that they got prioritized. And we're seeing that the maturing of these models mean that hybrid is normal, that we're always going to have infrastructure on-prem or in our own data centers, as well as services in the cloud, and we just have to be able to mix and match. I do feel like the cloud vendors are beginning to mature, that this next year or two, we're going to see less of the throwing features at the wall and seeing what sticks, and more of a simplifying and clarifying of offerings. So I don't know about you, but I go into the portal and I'm just wading through features trying to figure out what's important to me or not. Multi-clouds had a buzz this year and are likely to have next year. This idea that, hey, it's not in our best interest to keep all our infrastructure in one cloud vendor. I'm not sold on this. I certainly know the cloud vendors aren't sold on it. They want you on their infrastructure. I don't think you make the argument for reliability, that it's more reliable to have two clouds. It seems more fragile to try and maintain less sophisticated features that work across multiple clouds and so need more maintenance code and care and feeding, as opposed to using their sophisticated features which are specific to the platform. It's more accounts, more locations. It's really not that easy. The question is, why are you doing this? Is this a reason not to move to the cloud? Or is this a reason just to please a boss that thinks, oh, I don't want to be dependent on any one vendor? It's good to do some ROI here to really look at the costs overall and say, is it worth it for the amount of space and time we're going to have to spend? It's probably some additional people you'll need. And suddenly those costs add up and it doesn't make a lot of sense. But you've got to assess and you've got to pass it up to business. Give them the data to make a decision one way or the other. I also wonder, going back to the first half of the show, how much of us using the cloud now has to do with its better security features. Pretty much any cloud deployment you do is going to push you towards zero trust behavior just because it's in the cloud. Certainly when we think about M365 and stuff like email and the like, the better backup systems, the resistance to ransomware, their extensive threat detection systems in email, all of those things you kind of get built in, and it's very much worthwhile. The 4-pay security features, I've pushed on this a number of times over the past year, and we're seeing more and more. It's that, you know, Microsoft is a serious security team that's working every day to make things more secure. And if you're willing to learn those tools and stay up with the notes that they're providing, it's worth the expense, and it does make your systems more secure. You can resist. And one last thing I would say about the cloud more than anything else. If you've got more than 150 M365 licenses, you qualify for Microsoft Fast Track. If you haven't taken advantage of that, you're missing out. It's a free service to really get good advice about how to use those Azure cloud features well and the M365 features well. If you own those seats, you have a right to those calls. Take them on. Ask about security. Ask about the right way to use features and really to think more broadly about reducing your workload in the cloud and doing things more effectively rather than increasing your workload. That's what those Fast Track folks really know. And I'm going to continue to interview them because I think they're some of the brightest, most useful folks out there, and they're working in the field. They work with you to, you know, try and improve things. And I think that's a huge advantage for us to have access to things. Better than PSS. A lot of them are former Premier field engineers. And the Premier program was extraordinary, but only for certain customers. They've greatly broadened the access to that kind of skilled people through Fast Track. So I can't encourage you enough to go on and spend time with the Fast Track product. Moving on to another aspect of M365, and certainly a talking point throughout the year and coming into the new year, which is this ongoing growth in the low-code, no-code. And I'm generally talking about Microsoft Power Apps, but I would point out that if you go and look online for low-code, no-code products that are all kind of doing the same thing, tapping existing data sets and existing interfaces to applications through the cloud to present new clients, both in phone, tablet, and PC, there's dozens of products out there. If you're not interested in Power Apps, you're not heavily committed on the M365 space, maybe you're using Salesforce, and Salesforce Lightning is very much the same kind of thing, a way to put extensions onto their CRM product and to add additional features. But you pick one. There are literally a dozen of them. And to me, that says that there's a market demand here that is still going unfilled well. And so that's why you end up with so many different products struggling for the space. The reality, of course, is that we have two problems. We have an endless to-do list of apps that are needed, and we have an even longer list of apps that are built and need to be modernized. And we can encapsulate them. We can try all kinds of things. But one would argue that we are more secure when we move to these modern infrastructures where they're using the cloud properly, where they're automatically in zero trust, where the code surface is relatively small, where the libraries are owned by the vendor, not by you, so you're not responsible for fixing them. They'll fix them for you. Those are all things that this environment provides. So a more secure way to do that custom application dev with some obvious constraints. Developers are not fans. Folks used to doing automation often struggle with these things. It tends to be domain experts that grab onto this. And that's just not the first time that's happened. You know, I think back to the 90s with Access and Visual Basic, and which were considered toys by professional developers at the time. But a new group of developers coming out of domain experts grew out of those tools and became, some of them became developers in their own right. Some of them stayed domain experts just with some automation skills. And that's sort of the thing we're seeing right now. The difference being, of course, cloud-centric, working across an array of devices, decent default security, plugging into existing ERP, CRM, and data shared resources. So they're pretty much a little more draggy-droppy and able to build those things that are pretty hard for regular developers to build. We have a role in IT in facilitating that, enabling it, because they're not developers. So they're not going to be good at managing source control or being careful with account names. It's good to put up guardrails there to make sure they're not accessing data raw, but maybe a more massaged or abstracted version that's safer. This might even be where you, as the IT pro, may call to dev and say, hey, we have a group of folks that are trying to access data like this. I'd really like to have a layer built that could make it easier for them to do that. Some of that you could do through existing tools like Power BI and Power Automate if you want to get involved in that. In fact, if you want to have some fun, you know there's apps inside of your group alone that could probably make your life easier. Maybe it's worth spending a half day and studying up on Power Apps a bit, going through the tutorials and trying to build one of those basic forms over data apps that your own team could be using and have a little more awareness of how all these things work. A couple of internal IT projects, so you'll have a better appreciation for what the tools can do. Maybe create some automation your own self, but then also can think more clearly about how do I enable domain users, especially when they're collaborating with developers, to do the right things by these tools. None of us is getting to the bottom of our to-do lists ever. So anything we can do to knock a few more of these things off and to allow folks to do the most important work they can do along the way, it's a good plan and it's well worth paying attention to. And in that same vein, if you haven't jumped into data analytics via the cloud, now that you're starting to have more of your company's important data available to these cloud tools, where we used to spend hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars on data warehouses and OLAP cubes and things, today a lot of that stuff is by the minute through the cloud. And extracting more value from data today, in this relatively lean time when companies are worried about expenses and ROIs become more important, there is money waiting for the company to be made in the data you've already gathered. I would argue this is one of the biggest opportunities coming in 2022, is to just acknowledge that the company's business has changed, their customers have changed, and we don't necessarily understand how those changes are working. And so to spend some time with the modern data analytics tools to start reshaping our thinking around our customers and the way that we do business with them, there's huge opportunities there for us to do more and go faster. And if you're struggling with burnout, you're not alone. If you're tired of all these transformations and all of this opportunity play, yeah, I get you. We've been moving faster than was comfortable because of the urgency. In some ways, it's easier to just keep surfing the crashing wave than to try and figure out where we're actually going. But it's not likely to slow down anytime soon. While I'm recording this, the latest version of the pandemic is sweeping around the world, and there may be another one after that. We're going to have to keep going, but it's good to be patient with folks and to take a little time out for yourself as well. One last topic, and that is the role of the artificial intelligence technologies. Last year on the show, I said, you know, we're going to be focusing on ROI, and these AI techs, I suspect, are going to take a lot of backseat. Most of the experimental projects I saw being de-emphasized, and that seems to have come true. At the same time, the big vendors, the Microsofts, Oracles, Googles, and Amazons of the world have all been running their AI teams hard to improve efficiency for themselves. Better security technologies, lowering management costs with high-level automations and intelligence around this. Being able to determine service problems in advance and flow problems. all of these are things that we can use as exemplars. If they're looking for new projects and how to improve efficiency in the company, these applied machine learning technologies, they're good projects, and there's good examples for those, and that's an interesting space to work in, to have a view over the organization as a whole and say, is there places where we can make some improvements and do more in that area? And wrapping up, you may have noticed some changes to the show itself. We have moved to new infrastructure this year in 2021. I spent many months shaking off the cruft of making a show for more than 10 years, almost 15 years now. And so there were some casualties along the way. But one of the biggest problems is a service, an old sort of scaled down service from Google called FeedBurner. Many, many years ago when it was new in the aughts, we set up some FeedBurner accounts because back then RSS was more challenging than it is today. And Google's pretty much put the thing on hold to the point where even though I have 301 redirects to new RSS feeds for the show, FeedBurner's not listening to them. And it means that a lot of folks think that Run As Radio just went offline in July of 2021, which isn't true. So if you know anybody who used to listen to me but may not be because they've got an out-of-date feed, let them know we're still up and going. Come to the Run As site. I'm still hunting down those stray feeds and trying to kill them all off. In fact, I'd appreciate a shout out to anyone you think can use this information. I enjoy making the shows and the conversations are always fun, and happy to have more listeners. I appreciate your help any way you can. And if you got any questions for me, topics you wish I was covering, you can write me an email at info@runasradio.com. I answer everybody and happy to have a conversation with you. Make sure we're addressing the right things. It's been a long year, and next year is going to be challenging too. You know, maybe we get to the end of the pandemic becomes just an endemic and just something that we live with now. But depending on where you are, it's raging right now, or maybe it's just coming. It's not over yet. I think we've succeeded in IT. I think there's more awareness inside of organizations right now of how important their technology infrastructure is to the organization. I hope you're having better conversations with leadership. And if you aren't, you should book a lunch and have some conversations about it, because it's well worthwhile to let your leadership know, you know, you're thinking about the best of the company too and how the infrastructure can help it. That's our job. And I hope we can keep doing it and keep making a difference for organizations. It's the end of the year. I hope you're with your loved ones and enjoying yourself. And I look forward to talking to you in the new year. Thanks for listening. And we'll talk to you next time on Run As Radio.